Welcome to another edition of The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Ava Leon makes beautiful music. She has been called one of the most successful Spanish violinists of her generation. Born in the Canary Islands, her parents, her father a doctor, her mother a schoolteacher, began taking Ava to concerts when she was just 3 years old. Her first violin lesson came 5 years later, and that, Ava says, is when she fell in love with the instrument and told her parents she wanted to be a violinist. The rest is history. Ava's won the major Spanish violin competitions and several international ones. In 2006, she was the recipient of the 33rd Artist International Annual Debut Prize in New York, which led to her debut at Carnegie Hall. Ava has played with many orchestras around the world, performing as a soloist with the Mexico State Symphony, the Boston Classical Orchestra, the Arthur Rubinstein Philharmonic, to name just three. Miss Leon has also recorded several CDs. Her concerto repertoire includes works by Bach, Bartok, Dvorak, Haydn, Ravel, Mozart, and Mendelssohn. And her repertoire now includes a visit to the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women, and I couldn't be more honored and delighted. So welcome, Ava.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Your first violin lesson came when you were 8 years old, which you told me is quite late for a classical musician.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, classical musicians usually have their first lesson or the first contact with the instrument when they are 4 or 5 years old. So for a violinist to start at 8 is quite late, and especially to keep the career and to start a career as a violinist. But well, it worked out.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But how did you know? Was there just some kind of connection that is hard to describe, some kind of a love affair that you have? What do you know when you're 5, 6, 7, 8?
There is like a connection, mm-hmm. a connection that comes with talent. So basically a 5 years old kid that has the talent for something, anything. It can be music, it can be whatever.
But who knew you had the talent?
I didn't.
Did your parents know?
No, my teacher knew it the first lesson.
At 8?
At 8. The mm-hmm. first lesson I had with my teacher called my parents and told them this kid has something special. And I remember,
get her out of the playground.
Oh, yeah. And actually that first lesson, I came back home and I told my parents, I want to be a violinist. And the story began there.
Now, how did they handle that?
They definitely, you know, had me practice every day. And you know, I needed to practice a certain amount of hours.
Sure.
And then I stayed for my tests, for my concerts, etc. But not only that, but I left my family when I was 13 to pursue my career. So that was extremely difficult for them. And I had to move. I'm from the Canary Islands, but I had to move to Barcelona.
But first let me ask you, are you an only child?
No.
So where were you in the food chain? The oldest, the youngest, the middle, where were you?
I'm number three.
Number three.
Yeah.
And so your parents are raising...
Four children.
Yeah. This is really different when somebody's got tremendous talent.
It is very different. And they had to sacrifice by letting me go, by letting me find my own life at such a young age.
Sure.
That was very difficult for... I mean, it would be difficult for
anybody. Parent, sure.
You know? And they did it for me, and I'm really, really appreciate it. And I value that because that's true love for me, you know, that they...
So from 8 to 13, you're with your family, you're
yes.
taking violin lessons.
Yeah.
Did you have a normal childhood? You weren't like the other kids, and you certainly weren't like your siblings, right?
No. I believe I was a normal child, but my priorities were different.
Good point.
But I was very happy, always. I even was happy when I moved to Barcelona and my family was not there, because my family is such a loving family that I actually felt their love even when we were apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it was... I was very happy. I loved performing. I loved the violin. For me, it was fun. It was not work at all. It was really a lot of fun. Performing for me was such a pleasure. You know, I ask for it. Sometimes, you know, the friends of my family will come home and I will actually perform for them. So I think my parents did a good job by letting me enjoy it.
Wonderful.
They never gave me pressure or put pressure on me to be perfect and just, as you just said, as work. Mm-hmm. Never did that. For me, it was always fun. And I actually have that feeling even today. So it has been my whole life this way. And that's what really gives me the strength to keep with my career, that for me is really passionate and it's really fun.
So you felt that you had, for you, a very good balance.
Very good balance.
Growing up. Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Now, 13 is still pretty young to just sort of say goodbye to what you know, your family and your friends. Were you given a family to live with in Barcelona?
Yes. Actually, it's very strange because when I moved to Barcelona, which you are absolutely right, I mean, I was 13.
Yeah, what do you know?
Such a girl, no? For me, it was the greatest adventure of my life.
Well, first of all, you're in a big city now,
I'm in a big city. Not only in a big city, but I'm also alone. And not only that, it's the strangest feeling. I was alone physically, but I never felt alone, which I don't know how my parents did it, but it did work phenomenally well. I also had a great teacher.
Did you live with your teacher?
No. Oh. I lived, as you said, with families. They will rent rooms, and I will stay with these families, different families.
But did
families.
They become surrogate parents?
No.
So who was watching you? Or
nobody.
Nobody?
Nobody. I had to deal with everything alone. But once again, it felt natural. It didn't feel like it was a lot of work for me. Don't ask me why, but it truly didn't. And I never felt lonely. And I, of course, I missed my family. I loved them so much. But it was not traumatic, or I was not troubled by it. I loved being there. I loved starting my career. Then I started performing 2 years after. At 15, I already started professionally performing. So everything was kind of happening in such a natural way that I never felt alone or lonely. Mm-hmm. I never did. I would speak with my family constantly. And they were there with me, even though they were not there physically. I think the closest thing to a family was my teacher.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was my biggest emotional figure in Barcelona, aside from my family being away, of course.
Now, how did you get matched up with that teacher who clearly didn't teach you in the Canary Islands?
No, that's a very good question. Actually, Yehudi Menuhin, who mm-hmm. was a fantastic violinist, 20th century, one of the masters, had a music, summer music academy in Spain, in a beautiful village in north of Spain. Anyway, so I went to this summer course.
Before you were 13?
Before I was 13. I was 12. I turned 13 right there, actually.
Okay, so that was your first, that's where you first went when you got to Spain?
Yes.
Okay.
That was where I first went. Mm-hmm. And over there, I met my teacher, Xavier Turull, who became my teacher, my mentor, etc. So I met him there, and he again saw some talent in me, and he spoke with my family, and he, you know, he said, well, this girl needs to move from the Canary Islands and need, you know, to expand her.
So you initially were just going there for a summer program.
Yes. But I always knew I needed to leave Canary Island as well. And I know I was very young, but somehow violin was very important for me. Even if I was 9, 10, 11, it really was huge in my life. So I knew that I would eventually move away. And I was okay with it. It didn't represent a huge sacrifice. And not even today, I feel it was a huge sacrifice. I see it rationally, but I don't feel it emotionally.
So when you look back, there's probably a part of you that in a way can't believe what you did.
Exactly.
Even though it seems such a natural next
step.
Exactly. That's amazing. It's a great marriage.
Exactly.
Those two kind of contrasting, you know, positions.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
How many years in Barcelona?
I moved there at 13.
Right.
And then starting at 18, I started traveling everywhere. I lived in Poland. I lived in Salzburg. I even lived here in New York for a while, and also in London. I had a teacher in London. I would go every month to London for a while. So I believe that starting at 18, I started to travel and to find new teachers and new maestros that will also influence my career.
You did that by yourself, or did you have an agent?
Or? No, I did that by myself.
I'm hard-pressed to understand how you get, seriously, from Barcelona mm-hmm. to Warsaw.
I performed as a soloist with one orchestra. The conductor there from this orchestra is very well known in Spain. He's a fantastic musician. So I actually spoke with him and I said, look, I'm looking to expand my technique, my musicianship. And he recommended me to this teacher that he actually heard about. So mm-hmm. I went to Warsaw and auditioned for this teacher just to see if, you know, he could work with me. That's how it happened. It always have a connection.
Uh-huh.
You know, as when I went to Salzburg to study with my maestro Ruggero Ricci, also one of the greatest violinists. Unfortunately, he just passed recently. Anyways, I went there as well because my former teacher in Barcelona knew him. So I went to audition for him again and we started working with each other. So it always have a connection, always.
And it's almost as if everything kind of fit into place because it was supposed mm-hmm. to be.
It was supposed to be. Then when I was actually getting older, I made it happen as well.
Of course, you became much more proactive.
Definitely. But I believe that at that age, it happened because it had to happen. Yeah.
So at what point did you get an agent?
I got my first agent at 15.
So you did get somebody at 15.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, but they didn't take care of my career, of my education as a violinist. They took care of my concerts.
Right.
And my engagements and my recordings. But the teachers I chose, etc., that was a personal decision.
Were the teachers and the agent kind of interconnected?
Oh, yeah. At the beginning, yes. Then after that, it's all my responsibility. But at the beginning, my first manager in Spain actually was chosen by my teacher.
Why didn't you sign up with an orchestra? Did you not want to become part of a philharmonic somewhere?
No. I value very much orchestra musicians. Actually, it's a very, very tough work. But I never consider myself an orchestra musician. I always consider myself as more as an independent or soloist.
Uh-huh.
And that is kind of, I knew that since from the beginning, because I like to be in front of the orchestra.
I understand.
I like to interact with musicians in another level. When you're in an orchestra, it's like a huge machine. You know,
sure.
They have to work together. It's a fantastic experience by itself, but it's a different experience for what I'm looking for or what makes me happy.
But that also signals somebody out. You know, to be part of a machine is one kind of talent, correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Obviously to be a soloist, it takes it to a whole other level. And
different.
That's where the air is rare. Not so many people are breathing that air as you do.
No, I think that you have to have a special personality as well to be able to put yourself in front of an audience.
Aha, uh-huh. In addition to the talent, you mean?
Yes.
How would you describe yourself?
That's a very good question. I will come back to my childhood again
mm-hmm.
because I think it's a lifetime training to become a soloist. It's not something you decide. It's something you feel or you are born with. Because when I was little, again, I had fun performing in front of people. I enjoyed it. I that was my moment of kind of expressing myself after so many hours practicing alone in just one room. So that moment, you know, was all I had.
Right.
After, again, so much work. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's not only technically, but it's also musically and emotionally. So just getting to that point for me was worth it. So that feeling that I had, that was my time, that was my moment that I was looking for forward, that is pretty much what made me understand that was my path in life, meaning being in front of the audience and expressing myself because it's another language.
And that sort of takes you to a whole other level in yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, while you're aware that you're performing in front of hundreds of people, you're probably so in another place.
Yes, yes. It's something that you cannot explain.
Mm.
And, you know, there are moments when I have performed in front of a big audience that you kind of lose yourself in music.
Sure.
You know? And it doesn't happen always every time you perform, but there are these moments that are truly inexplicable, very good, very emotional.
I bet also exhausting.
Exhausting, very exhausting. I guess that if you have more interviews with performers, they're going to tell you that after a performance, you're drained.
No kidding.
You know, you're emotionally drained. And it's because you give more than just technique or musicianship. You give so much emotion and adrenaline, huge adrenaline rush. It's exhausting.
What happens to the times, and are there times, when you're not making that connection, when somehow the passion isn't there, but the talent is, so I may be none the wiser, mm-hmm. that you may not be feeling it? Is that true?
Oh, that is very true. Yeah, that is very true. There have been performances where I didn't feel it, and then I'm very disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it must be hard to keep reaching that high.
Totally, because it's not only about you. Many times it's also about the connection with whoever you're playing.
Sure.
You know, you can be in front of an orchestra, and the connection with the conductor just didn't happen. But when it happens, it's just
there's no
the
other feeling like
pleasure.
That in the world. Sure,
exactly. But sometimes it doesn't happen, and you have to really focus more in technique or in other aspects that take away the pleasure of performing. And that definitely happens quite a lot.
How do you feel about being reviewed? Have there been times when the reviews have been mm-hmm. less than pleasing?
Definitely.
And what happens to you then? And do you agree with them?
I listen to all my reviews, no matter what they say mm-hmm. about me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, obviously, some reviews are painful. You know, you work so much to
of
get
course.
to a performance, and if I feel that I did a good job, or that, as we were talking, I felt it. You know, I felt I was there. I felt there was a connection with the audience, and then I receive a review that doesn't agree with me. Then, you know, it's disappointing.
Sure. Well, the hell with them.
Well, exactly.
Who needs her?
Exactly.
Or her.
But I mean, what can you do? It's their job, mm-hmm. and they have all the rights to come to the performance and just, you know, give their opinion. And I totally respect that. But I'm not going to lie and say that it doesn't affect me.
Of course
it affects me. But you move on. And you go to your next performance, and then you will get a wonderful review.
What about the times when it hasn't worked for you? What's it like being up there?
That's a complicated question. It has happened, but I still kind of can go through it and have a certain amount of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give me, you know, the emotion I was talking about earlier, but I can definitely enjoy it.
Right. I bet it's very difficult to reach that.
It is
peak
very difficult, very
all
difficult.
The time.
Yes. Sometimes, for example, when I have to perform something for the first time,
mm-hmm.
first times are very difficult. Because once you move from that first time, everything relaxes and then you just can open emotionally. But the first times are very difficult to achieve. The first concerto, for example, that I remember, the first Dvorak concerto, violin concerto I ever played, or my first Brahms, I still remember those first times because I know that I have to be... I had so much work behind it. I never performed it before that a specific time. I have an audience there of hundreds of people, and I still need to feel it emotionally. When maybe consciously I'm still thinking about the music, I'm still thinking about the technique I have been practicing for some, you know, so many hours. So sometimes first times are very difficult to be involved emotionally because you have so many things that you still have to think, and they are still new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are still new. For example, just understanding the orchestra, listening to the orchestra behind, this is my first time. So it's
when you're
it's
performing, is your first time?
When I perform one piece for the first time, you know, like one specific
when you're
composer.
On stage in front of orchestra ABC,
mm-hmm.
you've practiced with them before the performance, correct?
Yeah, but it's not much practice.
Huh.
You know, I mean, if you are very lucky, you get possibly three rehearsals with them.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes four if you're incredibly lucky, but sometimes you get two.
And how long is an average solo performance?
An average solo performance, I guess it depends. If you are with the orchestra, it can be like 20 to 30 minutes.
And you never get to pick, correct? You're told what you're going to play when you're...
Most of the time, except if I have a friendship with the conductor or whoever is arranging that performance, and then we can talk about it and decide a specific program. But most of the time, they tell me what do I have to perform.
But you also perform solo without an orchestra,
correct? Of course, in recital.
Right. In recital. I couldn't think of the word. Right, recitals.
Yeah,
and then
piano.
And you pick and choose whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah, most of the time.
Is this life lonely?
It's more lonely than belonging to a group, definitely. I mean, I have to practice alone.
Mm-hmm.
I have to travel alone. And
do you travel by yourself? Or is there you're not part of an entourage?
No.
So the dates are... You don't have makeup and hair. And
not really, but that's it. You are right. I should have that.
We'll work on that.
Exactly.
Actually, you don't need makeup and hair. I mean, you're just quite a beautiful woman. Somebody's arranged all this for you. That,
yes.
You know, there was, what was that movie? Tuesday, it must be Belgium. You know, every day you're somewhere else. And you show up at the recital hall.
Yes.
But basically, it's all on your shoulders, isn't
it's
it?
It's all on my shoulders.
You're carrying your own bags and your own violin, aren't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. And my own performance dress. And, you know, I do everything. But I'm alone. I'm alone, as you just said. I'm completely alone. And the hotel is alone. Et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it's a great feeling to meet new people, don't get me wrong, and to go to new places. It's always new cultures for me. It's very attractive. But at the same time, yes, you know, you come back to the hotel.
So you've got two descriptions here. You're alone and you can be lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many days average are you on the road? Because your base is New York. What's an average year like for you?
That I don't know. I don't know, because every year can change. Sometimes I have years that I'm performing a lot, and there are some years that I'm not performing as much. So it really changes. And also, if I'm recording,
uh-huh.
I have to stay in a specific place for a long time. So it's difficult to say.
When you're here mm-hmm. and you're not performing and you're not recording, mm-hmm. you also teach.
Yes.
So talk to me about being a teacher.
I love it. I really love it.
And who are your students?
Well, I actually like to have mature students with whom I can talk and I can also intellectualize about music,
mm-hmm.
not only just, teaching what is technique in violin, but also have interesting talks. So I have just a few, very, very, very few.
But they're adults, aren't they?
Yes, they are adults.
Now, why is that?
I like them. I really like them. And then some of them have become incredible friends of mine who I completely adore. So it's a beautiful relationship because it's not only friendship what is there, but it's also the love of music that we
that
share
unites
together.
You, sure.
And unite us. So it takes it to a whole different level. And I wouldn't change it for anything in the world.
You also play with them.
I love it. I do chamber music. I coach them chamber music. I learn a lot from them as well. You know, sometimes they ask me very interesting questions I never thought of. You know, because...
Like what?
Technically,
uh-huh.
you know, like things
A question that I'm not going to ask you, quite frankly.
Yeah, technically. Or you know, musical questions that they can have about certain composers. But I just do it without thinking. The fact that I can actually stop and think, why do I do certain things in order to explain it to them, is incredibly interesting.
It does make you think.
It does make me think and make me understand, why do I perform or play in a certain way. So, you know, I love teaching them. And also I love playing with them. And be involved if they have any chamber group.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy working with them.
Do you see yourself teaching these students mm-hmm. in a sense the same way you were taught? Are you kinder, or are you a tough taskmaster?
Actually, I think I'm very kind.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yes, I think I'm kind. I have been lucky enough to have a very, very nice teachers. My teachers have been sweet and kind and always rewarding and making me feel that I can achieve.
Do you still have a teacher today?
No, I don't have teachers. I have advisors.
Advisors.
Meaning, for example, I had to record a CD lately and this type of music, which was the beginning of the 20th century music, etc. So I decided to have an advisor who could open my view
mm-hmm.
in this type of music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I choose them this way. If I'm performing a certain style, then I choose possibly somebody that is very knowledgeable about that style and can bring me something in some information that I just didn't know.
And do you have a particular affinity for one composer over another?
All the composers are so different. I need to fall in love with every composer I'm working with.
Has that not happened to you?
I have had some composers are more difficult mm-hmm. than others to kind of understand them and feel passionate about them. But at the end, I always fall in love with all of them, because if not, I cannot be honest. So I can say one composer above others. I can say that maybe the Spanish idiom, you know, musical idiom is obviously easier for me to understand. Exactly, it's in my soul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Sarasate, Granados, Falla, etc. is quite easy for me to understand. But then, obviously, I mean, Bach, I just adore, and Beethoven, Tchaikovsky. I mean, we are so lucky to have such an incredible pool of geniuses that it's very difficult to choose, very, very difficult.
Do you like other kinds of music?
Oh, yeah.
Like?
I love jazz.
Uh-huh. Do you play jazz?
Ella Fitzgerald. I wish so. Actually, I have friends that are jazz musicians, but I don't consider myself very good at it, so I can't say
you'd rather
that.
Appreciate it
exactly.
than participate in it.
Exactly. I'd rather sit and listen to a concert than actually be involved with it. But I have a huge respect for jazz.
How many hours a day do you practice, whether you're on the road or not on the road?
I would say that I possibly like 3 to 4 hours alone. And then if there's a performance, so I maybe have rehearsals with pianos, mm-hmm. pianists, or other musicians, if it's a trio with a cellist as well. And then, you know, you can be like playing 5-6 hours a day.
Has there been any kind of interesting experiences that have happened to you while you've been on the road? Things haven't worked out?
Or,
I mean, you know, I don't mean
I
to
have
focus
like
on
an encyclopedia about those things.
So what have been like embarrassing or scary moments?
Oh, many, many. But it's not really scary, but fun.
Fun, okay.
Fun to talk about them after the performance,
so
of course.
So talk about a couple of them.
Well, everything has happened to me. I think the one that I remember the most is in my Tchaikovsky violin concerto in front of the orchestra. My violin just that gets totally out of tune in the middle, right before a cadenza. Cadenza is when the violin is alone without anybody. So I had to give my violin to the concertmaster, take her violin, and just keep performing.
So your violin turned on you.
Oh, yes, completely.
and that's...
Completely.
And that's not a crazy thing to have happened?
That is a crazy, because the audience was there. I had to, in a split of a second, think, okay, my violin is not working. What do I do? So take the violin from the concertmaster and give my violin to the concertmaster, who gave it to the other violinist. So, I mean, it was very, very exciting in a way.
But that's wild.
That is totally wild.
That, and that had nothing to do
strange.
With you in terms of tuning it, whatever.
No,
it just decided
nothing.
That it was going to make your life miserable for that.
Totally.
Or test you or whatever.
Totally.
And you were totally nonplussed. You just knew what to do. And
I knew what to do, because, again, it took a split of a second. But somehow, when you are in front of the audience, and we come back, I guess, to adrenaline. You know, you do things immediately. You just don't even think about it.
Well, you've
been
performing now in front of audiences for more than two decades.
Yeah.
Where haven't you performed that you would like to perform?
That's a very good question.
If I was your fairy godmother and I could say, okay, Ava, name it, it's yours.
Okay.
And I want you to know I can't do that. But
I know. Maybe the London Symphony, mm-hmm. I guess, or... Yeah, there are quite a few places that I would love to play.
And where have you played in addition to Carnegie Hall here in New York?
In New York, no, it has been Carnegie and then other minor ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the big one has been Carnegie.
Is your family still in the Canary Islands?
Yes, they're still in the
Canary
Islands.
Now, do they travel to see you perform?
Yes, but they don't do it much because they never want to bother me. Bother me, that was the wrong choice of words.
That's all right, that's okay.
It means that... They also want me to be concentrated and not to be focused and not care that
right.
they are there and that I have to take care of them. So they come when it's very important and when they feel that they can be also with other people that can take care of them, because they don't speak English.
Uh-huh.
So it's more difficult
for
them.
Are your three siblings still living in the Canary Islands also?
None of them.
Oh, wow.
None of them,
When you think about it, I think to myself, boy, I'd like to move to the Canary Islands.
I know. My family is very strange because usually everybody in Spain actually stays in their birthplace.
So they're scattered all over?
Scattered, yeah. My brother is in China.
Wow.
I have another sister in Austin, Texas. I am in New York, and then the other sister is in Madrid, in Spain.
Are other family members musical, or you're the one with the musical talent?
I have an uncle that is actually a fantastic pianist. He's a teacher at the Madrid Conservatory, but he's a singer, accompanist. But he actually plays with Teresa Berganza many times, which is an incredible singer.
Just because one can play a certain instrument very well, does that mean that you play other instruments? Do you play the cello or the viola or the piano?
I don't. I play a little bit of piano, but it's embarrassing.
Why is that embarrassing?
Because I'm so bad. I'm really bad. Anyways, there are some musicians that actually can play millions of instruments. I just can't play the violin.
Well, you do what you do very well.
Yes,
so,
but I must say that that's pretty much the only thing I can do. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to end on that note. It's pretty much the only thing that I can do.
Oh, that
I think
true.
You're pretty damn accomplished. And
thank
I think
you.
It was so exciting to hear all about this because I have no talent.
Yeah.
And when
you do.
Well,
have
no,
a talent.
When I grew up, I took up the trumpet, but the neighbors all signed a petition. Yeah, they did.
No,
and they brought it to my parents and they said, she's got to stop. Because it was the summer time before, you know, people had air conditioning and I would play the trumpet with my windows open from my bedroom. It was terrible. So I stand in awe of people like you.
Thank you.
Ava, it was a real pleasure to meet you. Much continued success.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for bringing such beautiful music and joy to the lives
of
people.
Thank you.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. And if you'd like to reach the 51%, contact us at advertising@51%conversations.com. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.